People think of neighborly noise as a nuisance, but we think of it as an art form.
We want the sounds to be different, but completely unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm. It just sounds like bowling balls. That can't be what it is, but that's what it sounds like. Sounds like bowling balls.
Is it a bowling ball? Is it a metal barrel? You never know, because sometimes we get metal barrels.
You knew we were twisted, though. Julia is a fountain of creativity.
Oh.
She's a genius.
Oh.
She's so creative.
Oh.
It sounds like a baby the size of a giant is learning how to walk.
A floor is but a movie screen to project the mind's eye.
There's a lot of noise going on up here. Kind of sounds like...
Sounds tough.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yep. Be well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, welcome. My name is Nathan, and Jordan told you how great of a communicator that I am. And so what he really did is raised your expectation level. I want you to go ahead and lower them, okay? I'm not near as good as Jordan portrayed me to be. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to kick off this series, The Art of Neighboring. And I thought about going through each one of our church pastors, Robin in Salt Lake, Fito in Tijuana, Chris, Matt, Mike and James in Chula, and kind of making fun individually of each one of them. But then I thought it would really just be like pouring salt in an open wound, because I'm so much better looking than all of them that it just wouldn't be right. So I figured we would just jump right into it today. This past week, my wife, her name is Brooke, she was headed out to her growth group, and she took our youngest child. She was going to take our youngest child with her, and then it was my job to hang out with the oldest three. Yes, I said three oldest. We do have four. We're crazy people, and we love it like that. So I had this plan. I'm going to take the older three with me. We're going to go to the sports store. I've been saving up for a paddleboard for months, and so we're going to go get a paddleboard while mom is at her growth group. We'll have it at home, and as soon as she gets home, we'll surprise her, and then we'll all go to the bay and paddleboard. And then through a series of quickly changing events, Brooke decided to go to the store with us and not go to the growth group, something about my car being too messy for her to drive or out of gas, something like that, but whatever, something happened. So she comes to the sports store with us, and I don't even know what happened. I don't know what took place, but instead of walking out with a paddle board, I'm now excited about this trampoline we've purchased for our kids. I mean, it was smooth because I was excited about it. It wasn't until 2 hours into putting this trampoline together and being exhausted already that I thought, I should be paddle boarding on the bay right now. What just happened? Like, man, that was smooth. 2 more hours go by. I complete the trampoline. I finally take a seat on the patio. I grab a drink, and I'm watching our kids jump on the trampoline. My wife sits next to me, and she's like, hey, well, that was pretty easy, wasn't it? I was like, which part of that was easy? You sitting, watching me put together a trampoline? Yeah, that was pretty easy for you. And she goes, well, it wasn't like IKEA complicated or anything. I was like, well, true. It wasn't complicated. I mean, it was pretty simple. It all made sense. There's very few directions, but it was difficult. There are a lot of things in life that are difficult, but simple. There are a lot of things that they're not complicated, but they're not easy. Throughout this series, we're going to be talking about some things that are simple. They're not complicated, but they're difficult. They're not easy. Throughout this entire series, we're going to be talking about the Great Commandment. So the first thing in your notes today, you can write it down. We are to live out the Great Commandment. Now, if you're not a Jesus follower, or maybe not a Bible person really and don't know what the Great Commandment is, that's okay. I'm going to explain it more in detail in just a few minutes. What is the meaning of life? You know, this question has been a question that every civilization has asked since the beginning of time. In biblical times, the Israelites answered this question by following the commandments. What was the meaning of life? Was to follow the commandments passed down by Moses. Not the Ten Commandments, but they had actually taken the Ten and broken them up into 613 commandments. Then these religious leaders, the ones who were kind of running the society, would sit around all day long and they would debate and argue which was the greatest commandment. And each one had their own idea of which one was the best. And so they would convince a group of people, and then that group of people would follow them. And there was all these factions, these different groups that had their own ideas of what was the meaning of it all. What was the greatest commandment? So setting the stage, the religious leaders come before Jesus and they ask him, what is the greatest commandment? And then Jesus answers with one that was, the first one probably made sense to them, but then the second one would have been very shocking. And what really Jesus does is he takes what we have complicated, what humanity had complicated, and he makes it simple. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37 through 38. It's going to be on the screen. It's in your notes. And no, I haven't given you the first blank yet. For those of you, just I will in a moment. We're reading the verse first. Verse 37, it says, Jesus, quoting scripture, love the eternal one, your God, with all your heart, and all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. So what is the meaning of life? Number one, love God. What is the meaning of life? They come before Jesus. Hey, what's the greatest commandment? What's the meaning of it all? And he says, love God. It's that simple. It's not complicated. The most important thing in life is to love God. Now, when Jesus said this, all the heads would have been nodding. Yes, okay, that's the Sunday school. That's the church answer. That's a good one. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He continues on and says, there's actually one commandment that stands above it all, but there's a second that is pretty darn important. Jesus actually says it's almost nearly as important. So in Matthew 22, verse 39 through 40, we're going to read this. But what I want you to do with me is to read it out loud. This is going to be our theme verse throughout this series. So I want you to read it out loud like you mean it in your outside voices. Don't whisper it. No one will hear you and it doesn't count. Verse 30, can you do this? Can you read it out loud? Okay, I didn't believe you there that first time. Verse 39, here we go. And the second is nearly as important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The rest of the law and all the teachings of the prophets are but variations on these themes. What is the meaning of life? Number two, love your neighbor. Even though Jesus is asked for the single most important commandment, he answers with two. Love God, love your neighbor. Jesus does this because these two teachings cannot be separated. Yet, just like the religious leaders of the day, a lot of religious people try to separate these two. A lot of religious people try to love God while ignoring those around them. Yet Jesus made it consistently clear that loving God without loving people is impossible. Okay, real profound stuff that I have given you today. Love God, love people. Wow, that's like genius level stuff. Aren't you guys impressed? You should be. But here's where the tension comes in. Because a lot of us, we hear this and we say, yeah, I mean, I love people. No problem. I've heard this before. I have this overarching love for everyone. I don't naturally hate people. I naturally just love people. Well, how do you love them? I throw good thoughts their way. When I see people, I smile at them all the time. I walk around hugging and kissing everyone that I see. It works out really well, except for that whole time I got arrested and stuff. When we read this teaching of Jesus, love God, love my neighbor, we often think of loving our metaphorical neighbor, which translates into metaphorically loving no one. When my neighbor is a metaphor and not a person, it's pretty easy to love because it takes no action. Let me put it this way. And if you're taking notes, this is not in your notes, but you can write it down on the side. It's a principle. When we try to love everyone, we often end up loving no one. When we try to love everyone, we often end up loving no one. So our next question speaks to this idea. Who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Number one, anyone in need. Anyone in need. Now, one of my favorite things about Jesus was the way that he would answer questions. He would often answer questions with a story. And I love that Jesus was a storyteller. No story being represented at Comic-Con this last week rivals the stories of Jesus, except maybe like the second greatest story ever told. You can find it out. It's called Star Wars. You can look it up. It's amazing. It's awesome. So Jesus has asked a bunch of questions, setting the stage here in Luke 10 we're about to read, and he's been answering these questions, just kind of wiping the floor with the religious people. And one of the scholars is quite frustrated, and then he asks a question. Let's read it in verse 29 of Luke chapter 10. The scholar was frustrated by this response because he was hoping to make himself appear smarter than Jesus. Don't we often do that? We try to answer God-sized questions, thinking that we're smarter. Okay, the scholar says, "Ah, but who is my neighbor?" And then Jesus answers with a story. I'd encourage you, I'm not gonna read the story, I'm just gonna tell you a little bit about it. Read it later this week in Luke chapter 10. Even if you're not a Jesus person, you've probably heard this story. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, when we think of Samaritan, we attach the word good in front of it because of Jesus's story, like the Good Samaritan law, Samaritan's purse. These are good things. But when Jesus told this story to his audience, the Jewish people, the Samaritan would not have been thought of to be good. See, Samaritans were the half-breeds. The Jewish people looked down on them, and there was this pride that the Jewish people had at the time that they were pure Jews and that Samaritans were not, and they looked down on them. So when Jesus made the Samaritan the hero of the story, he was causing all kinds of uproar. And he tells the story like this. There was a guy laying on the ground, beaten up, bloody, his clothes are torn, and along comes a priest. Now think modern day would be like a pastor. And the priest walks up, sees the man lying there on the ground, beaten and bloody, and he thinks, oh, I don't want to get my shiny robe all dirty. I have like a really important job to do. I don't want to mess with this. And so the priest crosses over to the other side of the road. Next comes a temple assistant. Now the temple assistant would be like a modern day Jesus-loving volunteer. Someone who shows up and who is a part of things and assists and volunteers and does great things. And then this volunteer sees the man lying on the ground, beaten and bloody. And this temple assistant thinks, I can't help the guy. I mean, I wish I could, but if I help him, I'm going to be late. I can't be late. I'm way too anal for that. Listen, if you're one of these on-time people and you and I are meeting at 11 o'clock, don't text me at 10:55 and ask where I am. We're meeting at 11. I'll be there at 11 or shortly after that. Just wait till like 11:15 to text me. You know who I'm talking about, okay? So the temple assistant, let's move on. So the temple assistant crosses over to the other side of the road. A Samaritan comes up. When you think Samaritan, don't think good. Think of someone that would have been perceived to be less than, that was despised, that was hated. Just think like modern day Raiders fans. Samaritan comes up, he sees the guy beaten and bloody, and he has compassion for the man. Yes, Raiders fans can show compassion. He has compassion for the man. He bends down, he bandages his wounds, he takes care of him, he picks him up, puts him on his own mode of transportation, takes him to a hotel, checks him in, and then gives the hotel manager enough money for that man to be cared for until he's well. And he says, hey, if I come back, or he says, I'll come back and give you more money if this wasn't enough. And then Jesus asks a question of the people listening, of this scholar. In verse 36, which of these three proved himself a neighbor to the man who had been mugged by the robbers? Now, look what happens in verse 37. The scholar says this, the one who showed mercy to him. The scholar had so much pride, he couldn't even bring himself to say Samaritan. And then Jesus says, well then, go and behave like that Samaritan. What Jesus is saying is go and behave like that Samaritan. In under normal circumstances, if a Jewish man was on a road and a Samaritan was on a road, the Jewish man wouldn't have given the Samaritan the time of day. Jesus says, go and be like the Samaritan who cared for the person who was in need that wouldn't even have given him the time of day under normal circumstances. Who is my neighbor? Anyone that is in need. A few years ago, we were living in Colorado, and it was one of these rare times where you walk into a store, and when you go in, the sun is shining, the roads are clear, everything's fine. You're in there for an hour, and you walk out, and there's like 3 feet of snow on the ground all of a sudden. Snow is just pouring the whole time. Our friends in Salt Lake, you know what I'm talking about. People here, no idea. You guys drive like 2 hours just to see when there's like a half inch of snow on the ground. You know, this is different, okay? So we walk out, there's snow just everywhere. And so we get into our car, and when it's snowing, you have four-wheel drive. We pop it into four-wheel drive, and we start heading home. At that time, we just had two kids, Madison, she's our oldest. She was 4 or 5 at the time. Ethan was like 1 or 2 at the time. We get in the car, we come to the first stoplight. It's red, it turns green, and I'm ready to go, just wanting to get home because it's snowing so much. But the car in front of us isn't moving. The back tires are just spinning. BMWs, horrible in the snow. And so I get my gloves on, I get out, and I start pushing. You know, after finding out it's just a lady by herself in the car, and then another guy jumps out of his car, and we're both pushing this BMW, and finally we kind of get her on her way, and so hop back into my car and drive, and she turns right, and we turn left, and right as we round the corner, there's this line of cars going the other direction that are all stopped, most of them BMWs, horrible in the snow, and Madison, she goes, Daddy, are you going to stop and help everyone on the other side of the road? And I was like, no, Madison, we can't, because if we stop here, we'll just cause a traffic jam for this side. So we just keep driving, and then along comes another car that stopped, and another car, and another car, and every single one. Daddy, are you going to stop and help that car? Daddy, are we going to stop and help this car? Come across a minivan. There's like 6 people in there, and they look freezing. We're not stopping. We're just going home. And then we get home, and she's like, why didn't we stop and help? And I came up with some really wonderful excuse, but really, none of those other cars were in my way. I was just pushing that lady out of my way. You know, I might have seemed like a good Samaritan, but she was just blocking my route home. You know, a lot of us, we're really good at loving our neighbor in need when it's convenient for us. When it's convenient. When it's not convenient, not so much. Who is my neighbor? Anyone in need. And number 2, anyone who is near. Not metaphorical neighbors, but the people literally living right next to you. When Jesus said, love your neighbor, he didn't just say that means love all people. He said, love the guy that's on the same road as you. Tells a story. There's a guy on a road. That's the one you love. Acts chapter 17, verse 26 through 27. From one man, he made all the people of the world. Now they live all over the earth. Listen to this. He decided exactly when they should live, and he decided exactly where they should live. God did this so that people would seek him and perhaps they would reach out for him and find him. They would find him even though he is not far from any of us. God knows where you live. He knows your neighbors. Do you? You know, I personally had quite a journey with this whole loving my neighbor thing. I realized at one point we lived in a house for over 4 years and I didn't know any of my neighbors. I kind of knew the guy next to us. I didn't know his name or anything. I just knew that he had tools and I needed to borrow them every now and then. But that was the extent of our relationship. And I heard a teaching like this and I began to realize, man, why don't I know any of my neighbors? And it was because I figured it out. I was so consumed in my own world and in my own life, I wasn't taking time for anyone next to me. Also realized for me, it was some insecurity that I needed to overcome. After realizing this, I began to work hard at overcoming these and getting to know our neighbors. You know, there's always going to be needs around you, and you won't be able to respond to all of them, but the Holy Spirit, if you're a Jesus person who lives inside of you and who is with you, nudges us to help those in need. It's our job to respond to those nudges. We talked about this in our Heavyweight series. If you missed it, I would definitely encourage you to get online and watch it. How do I love my neighbor? Number one, how do I love my neighbor? Real profound. Know their name. Know their name. It's hard to love someone when you don't even know their name. Knowing someone's name is simple, yet it can be hard. The first step to loving our physical neighbors, not our metaphorical ones, is to get to know their name. You know, there's actually a lot of brain science out there that will tell each one of us just how much we love hearing our name. Something happens in our brain chemistry when someone says our name, when we hear it. It brings enjoyment. Yet, how many of you, don't raise your hands, but how many of you know your 8 closest neighbors? You're making a list in your mind right now. Okay, I got 1. I got 2. I got 3. Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Oh, that's all I got. Some of you are like, I don't know any of my neighbors. So you say, hey, I know all 8. In your program, we've given you a bookmark that looks like this. The Art of Neighboring. On the back side, there are 8 blanks. What this is this is a tool. It's a resource for you to take home, not to leave in your program, to let fall on the floor, but to take home. Put it on your refrigerator, put it on your nightstand, and begin getting to know the names of your 8 closest neighbors. Maybe put the bookmark on your refrigerator, you know, but if you have one of your neighbors over, you might want to take it off because if they see their name there, it could be a little awkward. Once you know the names of your neighbors, start praying for them. It's amazing what happens inside of our hearts when we begin to pray for people. You know, a couple months ago, I was sitting in the condo here in Eastlake that we lived in at the time, and I heard this frantic pounding on our front door, and I ran downstairs and I opened the door, and it was one of our neighbors. Her husband was off in the Navy, and her faucet had broken, and the water was just coming out all over, and she didn't know what to do, and so she asked if I could come and help. So, of course, I was glad to go over there. I mean, I'm not a plumber, so I didn't know what I was doing, but I at least could turn the water off for the plumber to come. She felt comfortable coming over and asking for help because we knew each other. We knew each other's names. We had making an effort to get to know one another. You know, even though we've moved from that condo and now we're living up by Mission Valley, by the church we pastor up there, we're still praying for that family. She was comfortable because we knew her name. Get to know your neighbor's names. You know, maybe you know your neighbor's names and you hate them. Maybe your neighbor just keeps moving his fence like in 6-inch increments over your property line. Start praying for them. Not God smite them prayers, but God like increase their joy type of prayers. Start praying for your neighbors. It's amazing what happens when we begin to pray for people. Number 2, how do I love my neighbor? Look for ways to serve them. Look for ways to serve them. Start being watchful and aware of what is happening in their lives and look for ways that you can serve them. Look what it says in Philippians chapter 2, verse 3-5. Don't be selfish. We could just pause right there and we could just spend an entire message on that one. I know I could use it. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests. Now, if you're an underline, a circle person, an asterisk, an arrow, whatever, this next phrase, I want to draw your attention to. but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. It is simple. It's not complicated, but it's hard. It's not easy, but we are to take an interest in others too. The easy thing to do would be to sit at home and not engage your physical neighbors. You know, the number eight that we came up with, there's nothing magical to the number eight, but typically in a neighborhood, if you live in a house, there's three houses in front of you, there's three houses behind you, and one on each side. And all the math people, that's eight, okay? If you live in a condo or an apartment complex, typically above and below, there's around eight. Now, if you say, well, there's no one in front of me, I only have to learn three. That's not the point. Come on. The easy thing would be to not learn their names. The easy thing would be not engage the neighbors. But Jesus never invited any of us to do the easy things. Jesus invited us to do the important things. Jesus never invited us to do what was easy. He invited us to do what was important. You know, this last week, a member of our church family shared a story with me about how one of their neighbors served them. One of their neighbors came over and just said, hey, can I take one of your kids out on an outing? And so they said, yeah, of course, please take the children. And so they took one of the kids out on an outing. And then while they were doing that, this member said, well, I felt like I wanted to do something as well. And so I went out and I chopped down all the weeds behind her garage because I know that they've been something that she's been wanting to do but hadn't been able to get to. And then whenever she came home, she was so excited because he had taken that step and chopped down those weeds. When we look for ways to serve our neighbors and then we serve our neighbors, it naturally garners a reaction and there is this reciprocation that takes place. Just think for a moment with me. Within the last 30 days, when was the last time you served a neighbor? In the last 30 days. Maybe you haven't at all. That's 30 days without serving a neighbor. This is not complicated stuff, but it's a reminder to each of us what being on mission for Jesus looks like in our neighborhoods, in our homes. You know, I have to ask myself the same question all the time. We just moved into a brand new neighborhood to be closer to the church that we now pastor, and we're starting over getting to know our neighbors. And my daughter last night was outside on the patio listening to this teaching, and she comes up and she's like, what are we going to do this week to serve our neighbors? And I was like, yeah, let's do something because I preached about it. I should probably do it. So she's coming up with a plan. How do I love my neighbor, number three? Include them into your life. Include them in your life. Each one of us should become experts at being intentionally available. Are you open for business? Are you available for walk-ins? Or is your life closed? Grab some meat and chips. Go to the community grill and start grilling up food for everyone at the pool. Next time you go to the movies, include a neighbor. Invite a neighbor to go with you. Movies are great. They're easy. You get to sit there for 2.5 hours and not talk to people. And those of you that talk in the movies, you're not supposed to. The next time you see your neighbor, if you don't know their name, walk up to them and say, hey, I don't think we've met. Or simply say, hey, what's your name again? If you don't remember their name, that's okay. They don't remember yours either. Invite a neighbor over for dinner. Maybe even throw a block party. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9, it says this. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Some of you need to underline the last two words there. Hospitality without grumbling. Romans chapter 12, verse 13 says, share what you have with the saints so they lack nothing. Take every opportunity to open your life and home to others. Take every opportunity to open your life and your home. You know, there was a family in northern San Diego County that moved here from the Midwest. And so when they arrived in their neighborhood, the mom wanted to do something nice for her neighbors. And being from the Midwest, she started baking cookies. She would take her kids over. They would knock on their neighbors' doors and offer up cookies. Three things would happen. Some neighbors just wouldn't come to the door whatsoever, even though they knew they were home. Other neighbors would come and gladly accept the cookies and begin a conversation. Or some of the neighbors actually just slammed the door in her face. But she continued to bake cookies, continued to smile, continued to go and serve her neighbors. And after a while, this love that she had for her neighbors began to be contagious, and everyone in the neighborhood began mutually serving and loving one another. Well, this family had a son named Austin, and Austin has had some medical issues. And his favorite holiday is Halloween. And this particular Halloween, he was dealing with one of his medical issues, and he ended up in the hospital. All year long, he has his costume ready, and he's excited about this holiday, and he was so bummed that he missed it. Well, a few days later, he came home from the hospital, bummed that he had missed Halloween, and the day he came home, there was a knock at the door, and it was one of the neighbors. And one of the neighbors, the mom greeted him at the door, and he said, "We know how much Austin loves Halloween. We know how bummed he was that he missed it. So we all got together and we talked about it, and all the kids have kept their costumes. Everyone has saved some candy, and we're doing Halloween tonight." The mom went back and told Austin, and he was so excited. He put on his costume, and they had their own Halloween that night. There's this community that was developed, this mutual love and care that was developed that all started with baking cookies, slam doors, and smiling. That's what this bookmark is all about. It's about taking that first step and getting to know your neighbors, taking that first step into building that type of community, that mutual love that can take place. Our goal throughout this series and our goal for our church is that East Lakers would become the best neighbors that there are. That East Lakers in Tijuana would be the best neighbors Tijuana has ever seen. That East Lakers in Imperial Beach and in Mission Valley and in Chula Vista and in Venice and in Salt Lake would be the best neighbors that those communities have ever seen. Just imagine with me, think for a moment, what could happen if we each individually started loving our neighbors the way that Jesus loved us? He loved you so much, he sacrificially gave of himself for us. What if we loved our neighbors like that? Entire streets, entire complexes, entire neighborhoods, communities, and cities could be changed, not only for in this life, which when there's mutual serving and loving going on, it's a much more fulfilling life on this earth, but just think of the eternal impact that could take place if each one of us individually began to love our neighbors.